I'm Ilana Ravel, Jewish Learning Ventures CEO.
And I'm Robin Matthews. I have 1,000 titles. I'm the director of JKID Pride, PJRWA Engagement, and I'm JLV's graphic designer.
And we want to welcome you to the first episode of our new blogcast, More Than Four.
Okay, I have questions. First, what is a blogcast?
Well, Jewish Learning Venture has had a blog for a really long time. Right. And we were thinking maybe it's time to try a new format. Shake it up a little. Turn our blog into a podcast and call it a blogcast.
Oh, that's clever. But why not just call it a podcast?
Well, we already have a podcast exclusive to our Shomrim, our most generous donors. And we wanted to create content that was available to everyone.
But if people want to listen to our original podcast series, they can join our Shomrim, right? And we can link the info to that in the show notes, I guess.
Perfect. Okay, so you said you had more questions.
Yeah, I had lots of questions. I have many, as you know. but more than four. So that was the next question. I was going to ask what the name of the blogcast More Than Four means.
Well, you may be familiar with the four questions we ask on Passover.
Don't ask me to ask them right now. Actually, it's four answers and only one question, right? That's not even four questions. It's very
precisely.
It is misleading.
Yeah. And you're right. It's very confusing. Yeah. And maybe that's one of the questions we'll answer in an upcoming episode.
Teaser.
But the idea is that there are actually so many questions and answers in Judaism, some really simple and some much more complicated. And one of the coolest things about Judaism is how we're encouraged to ask questions and seek answers in conversation with one another. Yeah. So in this blogcast, we're going to do just that, answer questions.
Well, that seems ambitious. I mean, I know we're Jewish Learning Venture, but really, have we learned it all?
Well, of course not. But we do know lots of things. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, we have lots of connections and resources. We know lots of people.
We do.
So we can find the answers or the people who know them.
All right. Awesome. So where are we going to get these questions? Like, who's asking
what? All right. Really? Like, you weren't kidding.
No, I'm serious.
You had a lot of questions. So they'll come from our listeners. Our listeners will comment or email with the things they've been wondering about Judaism, Jewish traditions, culture, holidays, words. And really? We will find the answers, whether because we have an expert on our staff, or because we can find someone else who can join us as a guest.
That sounds fun, actually. And I feel like I could submit a bunch of questions, as you know, right from the jump.
I think so.
There are like a million words my grandmother used to say that I don't know the meaning of. Maybe that would be like a whole episode.
Perfect.
All right. Well, we'll see how it goes. But we should probably jump in because I know we actually have questions waiting in the queue.
Yeah. More than four.
Look at you. Look at you.
Okay, so we're going to start with a question that's complex, that raises many additional questions.
Right, it seems ambitious to start with a complex question, but
it is.
I feel like we are ambitious
people. We're up
people.
For the challenge.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's a venture. It's a learning venture. What? All right. So our question today is, what makes food kosher?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's a big one too, because there's food that's kosher and then there's keeping kosher.
And then there's kosher for Passover.
Right. I guess for now then, let's just answer what makes food kosher, because keeping kosher at home and kosher for Passover is like a whole different ball of wax.
Perfect. So what makes food kosher? So we hear about kashrut, which is the practice of keeping kosher.
That's a Hebrew word.
Mm-hmm. And we learn about it in the Torah. It actually is mentioned multiple times in the Torah, in the five books of Moses, starting in the first book, even in Genesis, and really shows up in four out of the five books.
Oh.
So we learn bits and pieces, and from there, we have developed this system that we refer to as kashrut. And the idea of keeping kosher, sort of the concept behind it, is that it's a way to bring in holiness into our daily lives. So it asks us to take a moment and think before we eat about where our food is coming from and how it's been prepared. So what we learn about food that's kosher is animals have to have cloven hooves, which means they are split.
Mm-hmm.
They must chew their cud, meaning they eat grass and they actually regurgitate and then eat it again.
Delicious.
Yes.
Yum.
Seafood has to have fins and scales, so shellfish is not allowed. There are specific birds that are identified. We know that birds of prey are forbidden, but then there are specific birds, and they're not totally categorized, so you have to sort of pull them out from the text as to what is and isn't allowed, but we know that poultry is allowed.
And encouraged, I feel like it's all over the place.
It's all over, yes. And meat and dairy cannot be eaten together, which comes also from the Torah. There's a phrase that says, do not boil a kid in its mother's milk, and from there we take the idea that you shouldn't combine. So those who follow the dietary rules can't eat cheeseburgers, as an example.
Bummer. For those who choose to enjoy cheeseburgers. It's not you, though.
Not me. I'm vegan. Right. Yes. And actually, you just shared with me offline that you just learned about this idea of how long you wait in between.
Yeah,
and so that comes from this idea of not eating milk and meat together and determining, well, okay, so a cheeseburger seems a little obvious, but then what does that mean if I want to eat a burger and have a milkshake for dessert or an ice cream sundae? And so depending on who you ask, there is a waiting time, and the question is how long that waiting time may be.
Is there like a big reason for this?
I think it's about the increase of holiness. Mm-hmm. The idea that we are being a little more thoughtful around the kinds of food that we're eating, how they were killed, because kosher meat was killed in a specific way.
Is it like more humane, or is it
supposedly more humane? Uh-huh. It's a quick slaughter across the neck. It has to be a perfect line. Mm. So you have to be trained in how to do it so that it's supposedly painless. Mm-hmm. You can't eat an animal that was found dead in the woods, mm-hmm. as an example, because you don't know what may have happened to that animal. And just being thoughtful around how you make your food. Mm-hmm. But the other question about, you know, does it taste better? Is it about cleanliness? So some of that is in the process. So with meat, once you slaughter it, it has to be salted because you can't eat any of the blood. Mm-hmm. And so in order to draw as much of the blood out, they salt the meat. And what happens is it makes it, apparently, the meat a little more tender, I think.
Yeah.
And it makes it cleaner. Mm-hmm. But it's really about the practical salt draws out the blood, and we're not supposed to eat the blood.
All right.
Yeah. And then there is food that we can't eat, right? The stuff that doesn't fall in these categories, and we refer to that as treif, which I don't believe.
Is that?
I don't actually know if that's
Hebrew.
I feel
like that might be Yiddish. Put it in the show notes.
We'll put it in the show notes. And that goes with not only the categories of food, but as an example, the cow that was found dead in the pasture is treif. We can't eat that meat.
And so it has to have cloven hooves and chew its cud, which is why pork, for example, is not, because pigs have cloven hooves, right?
Correct.
But they don't chew cud. So it doesn't meet those two requirements.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. It has to meet all
of
it.
So no bacon wrapped scallops. That's a double whammy.
That's a double whammy. So that really covers sort of what makes food kosher. It has to be a certain category. It has to be killed if it's meat in a specific way. Mm-hmm. And then once it gets to the market, it has to have certification. And there are a number then that you might see on a product. So the most common is what we call the OU. It's an O with a U inside. That tells us that group of rabbis, the organization, has certified that it is kosher. Even if it's dairy or it's a dry goods product, you want to know that it was prepared on equipment that did not have non-kosher dairy,
other
meat,
stuff,
et cetera, shellfish,
so this is that. Is that thing called the Heckscher?
Correct.
That's a term I just learned. Like, I've learned since working here.
Yes.
Because at our program, when we do programming, we make sure that snacks that we give are Heckschered.
Exactly. Yeah. So that comes from the same root as kashrut, Heckscher. And it's the idea that it was given the certification of approval. And there, you sometimes see a triangle K is another one. There's a star K.
I've seen something that has a P.
So if you have like star K with a little P, that means it's also kosher for Passover.
And what about parv or par, like parv?
So parv are things that are neither considered meat or dairy.
And they can go with either.
And they can go with either. So vegetables, fruits are parv. Fish is actually considered parv.
Why is fish not a meat? That's so weird.
I don't know. And to throw an extra like question out there, there are people who believe that chicken should be considered parv.
Huh. Interesting. So can you eat I feel like I have way more questions than I thought I was going to have about this. It's fascinating to me. But can you eat, like, eggs that come from non-kosher? I mean, I guess it doesn't become kosher till it's killed, so it's fine while it's alive?
Yes, and I'm not sure there's a... I'm trying to think what's a bird that we can't eat that lays eggs that people eat. Like, here's the thing about kashrut, right? It is, you can continue down the rabbit hole. There's so many, and they're important and meaningful questions.
But you can't eat rabbit, can you? I kept trying to figure it, as you said rabbit hole, I was like, doesn't have hooves? It's not a bird? Yeah.
So there's a lot of reading. There are a lot of options resources. We'll put a couple of resources for people who want, you know, and there are levels of kashrut, right? We know that people adapt kashrut in a way that works for their family, and people probably, if you asked, you know, half a dozen people why they choose to keep kosher, the reasons will vary, right? Some people will say because it's what we learn in the Torah, and others will say, I want my family to be more mindful, and some say, I like the meat better, and right, there's so many different reasons for why people might choose to live that way, that they also might tweak the kashrut to fit their lifestyle, as we know with so many other rituals and traditions in Judaism.
Well, that definitely cleared some things up and brought up a thousand more questions. And we got to talk about cloven hooves. How often does that come up in casual conversation?
So if you have questions about Judaism, no question is too big or too small, obviously, because this one could have gone on and on, let us know. Send us an email at morethan4, using the number 4, at jewishlearningventure.org. That's morethan4 at jewishlearningventure.org. You can tweet us at jlearnventure. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/jlearnventure or reply in a comment wherever you found this podcast link.
I'm super excited to see what other questions our listeners have.
Me too, and I'm excited to do the research or to find the experts who can answer them.
That's perfect. So until the next episode.